The greatest story ever told is a true story. It is a story of adventures, battles, kings and queens, heroes and villains, good and evil, history and prophecy. It is your story. Come join the adventure of the Bible story. Chapter 100. David wants to build the temple. Sound the alarm. An army is coming. With trumpets blaring, messengers rushed into David's chambers. They told him that a massive army of Philistines was marching up the Rephaim Valley toward Jerusalem. David's first impulse was to charge out with his army and attack the Philistines, but he remembered past lessons learned. The first thing David did was order everyone out of his room. He then prayerfully asked God two questions. Should he go out and fight or stay put? And would God deliver the Philistines into his hand? David knew that unless God was fighting his battles, he didn't have a chance. After God told David that he should go up and fight, David immediately assembled his army and dispatched scouts to track the movements of the Philistines. Unlike the Philistines, who hastily assembled an army to attack, David knew that much of warfare was strategy and planning. While Saul was king, the Philistines were content to let the Israelites fight among themselves. But it surprised them how quickly Israel united under David. They knew what a strong leader David was and wanted to crush him before he could fully consolidate all of Israel and fortify Jerusalem as his capital. From his time living with the Philistines, David learned a lot about how they fought. He knew that many of these people did not get along, and some even hated each other. He knew that there was little loyalty among the Philistines, and that it was mostly their loathing for the Israelites that kept them together. It was this understanding that helped David form his battle plan. When the Philistines saw the Israelite army approaching, they closed ranks into a massive wall of men stacked several deep that stretched uniformly across the valley. Instead of ordering his men to form a similarly long and thin line, David ordered his smaller army into a dense wedge-like formation. When the armies collided, the Israelite soldiers pierced through the Philistine lines, dividing them. This allowed the Israelites to fully concentrate their forces on the enemy soldiers, while many of the Philistines were left ineffectually out of position. With their formations crumbling, the disloyal Philistines broke ranks and fled back down the valley, discarding anything that slowed them down. It was a great victory for the new king of Israel. David called the place of battle Baal Perazim, which means the master of the breaches. This may have been a reference to the way God caused the Israelites to break through the Philistine lines, just like a small leak of water that breaks through a dam, then turns into a torrent of water and washes everything away. In their haste to flee, the Philistines left behind all kinds of weapons and armor that David quickly gathered. David noticed that the Philistines also left behind their many idols. Idols can be anything that people worship. Sometimes they can be graven images in the shapes of animals or mythological creatures. Many soldiers carried such things with them because they thought the idols would protect them. As silly as this seems, many people today still carry good luck charms like rabbits' feet crosses, lucky pennies, and crystals, even though these objects don't actually have any power. David knew God's instruction on idols and had his army burn them all. He didn't want any of the Israelites to bring such pagan objects back home with them. David and his triumphant army returned to Jerusalem, but the peace did not last long. Just as David suspected, the Philistines were gathering an even bigger army. It wasn't long before the Philistines had assembled another, more fearsome force and began once again marching up the Rephaim Valley toward Jerusalem. David immediately sought God's direction. This time, God gave David some specific instructions. He told David not to attack the Philistines head-on like he did the last time. Instead, God told him to set up an ambush. He was to secretly outflank the Philistines by taking his men behind the Philistine camp and hiding among the bushes in a portion of the valley that was known for its mulberry trees. There, David and his men waited in silence for God's signal to attack. A breeze began to stir the tops of the mulberry trees. The rustling of the leaves created an unusual sound. The noise grew louder and louder, finally becoming audible to the Philistine camp. To them, it sounded like the forest was filled with a massive army sneaking up on them. This was the signal that God told David would be the sign that he would go out and fight the Philistines for Israel. When the Philistines heard the sound of the mighty wind, they panicked. They thought their camp was under attack. And in fact, it was. God was attacking the camp. In the confusion, the Philistines began fighting with each other. Remembering the last battle with the fierce Israelite soldiers, some Philistines began to flee. Then David's troops hit the camp too. All semblance of ordered opposition was lost. Many thousands of Philistine soldiers died in the valley. Others died as David's men pursued them all the way to the Mediterranean Sea and Israel's border with Egypt. It was another huge victory for Israel, and an even more important one for Israel's new king. After these great victories, the Philistines never posed a threat to Israel again. God had reduced them to a third-rate power. From this point on, under the righteous leadership of David, Israel quickly expanded in power. Now that David had rest from the Philistines, he turned his attention to building Jerusalem into the capital of Israel. He wanted this city to be a headquarters the whole nation could look to and rally around. The first thing he did was plan to move the Ark of the Covenant from Jerath-Jearim, where it had been left after the Philistines stole it in the early days of Samuel. David wanted to involve the whole nation in bringing the Ark to Jerusalem. He sent out invitations to all the chosen men of Israel, the nobility, the elders, and the captains, 30,000 people in all, to be a part of this historic event. David commissioned dancers and musicians to play bagpipes, harps, cornets, and cymbals to lead the way before the ark. He had massive stores of bread, meat, and wine prepared. It was to be a very happy and inspiring event. Then tragedy struck. Since Kirjath-Jearim was 10 miles away, David decided to have a new cart built to transport the ark. As the parade neared Jerusalem, one of the oxen stumbled, and the ark wobbled. Uzzah, who was one of two brothers driving the cart, hastily grabbed the ark to steady it, and God struck him dead. What had gone wrong? as David was soon to realize he had disobeyed God's instructions on how to handle this sacred object. God had said that the ark was only to be handled by the sons of Kohath of the line of Aaron, using special poles that ran through rings on the ark and never touched. It was also to be carried by those poles on the Levite's shoulders, not on top of a cart. The law made it very clear how the ark was to be treated, and David should have known that. In his zeal to quickly move the ark to Jerusalem, David never consulted with the Levites or made sure he was following the law, which was a big mistake. When we obey God, we have to do it the way he says, and in the order he says, do it. And David didn't do that. God was teaching David how to be more than just a good king. He was training David to rule forever. And this was a powerful lesson in obedience he needed to learn. Even kings are subject to the law. After seeing Uzzah die, David was at first very angry. He didn't understand why God would allow such a thing when he was trying to make God the central focus of the nation. David hadn't yet learned his lesson. David then became fearful of God. With the happy celebrations brought to a halt, David directed that the ark be left at the nearby home of Obed-Edom on the outskirts of Jerusalem. David was uncertain whether God even wanted the ark in the capital city. Months later, he received news that Obed-Edom's household was being blessed by God. The king was certain this was occurring because of the ark's presence at his home. He took that as a sign that God did, in fact, want the ark in Jerusalem. By this time, David had realized what he had done wrong. He was now determined to transport the ark precisely according to God's law. The Levites carried the ark on foot, using the wooden poles. The priests walked before the ark, blowing trumpets. A great throng of people filled out the procession. Every so often, the parade would halt and offer sacrifices to God. The closer they got to the capital city, the louder the singing grew, and the greater their joy. When the ark entered Jerusalem, David was overcome with happiness and danced his heart out before the people. Everyone knew how excited David was, and the crowd reveled in his dancing. But not everyone was impressed. As David began one of his most athletic series of Highland twists, David's wife, Michal, looked down from her palace window. "Look at David's silly dancing with the commoners," she said to herself. "A king shouldn't act so base in front of all the people, and all to impress a bunch of silly girls. Just wait till he gets home." Once the ark reached the ornate tent David had erected for it, many burnt offerings and peace offerings were sacrificed, and David's servants distributed great quantities of food to all the people. Once everyone was full, David offered a prayer to God and blessed the people before sending them home. After one of the happiest days in David's life, he was looking forward to spending an inspiring evening at home. But how he was shocked by what greeted him. "How glorious was the king of Israel today?" Michal sneered as she met him at the door. "Did you have fun trying to impress all the servant girls with your shameless dancing?" David couldn't understand why Michal was so upset. "When I danced, it was because I was excited to bring the ark to its proper home and to honor God," he said. "Maybe my dancing was a little enthusiastic, but I am sure God is more concerned with my attitude. Don't you understand what this day means to Israel?" David's response angered Michal even more. Instead of being corrected, she haughtily swung her head around and stomped out of the room. Michael was more worried about her reputation than the work of God. Because of her bitter attitude, her relationship with David was never the same, and she did not have any children. After David moved into the beautiful palace that King Hiram of Tyre had constructed as a gift for him, David began to spend more time in meditation and prayer. Often David would study and have vigorous discussions with his friend Nathan the prophet. Much time was spent pondering God's throne and if the nation was being blessed. One morning, David told Nathan about something that was bothering him. "Here I sit in this beautiful house of cedar, yet the ark of God sits in a tent of curtains. It just doesn't seem right." "I want to build a magnificent house for God," said David. "It should be something to inspire the whole nation." "I think that is a noble idea," replied Nathan. "Why shouldn't God dwell in a royal and more magnificent structure? I think God would approve of this idea." That night, God appeared to Nathan in a vision and told him that this actually was not part of his plan for David. "Tell David that I have not dwelt in a house since I brought Israel out of Egypt, and for all these years, I have never asked for a house to be built for me," God said. "Although I much admire David's desire, it is not for him to build me a house," God told the prophet. "But tell him not to be sad. That honor will go to his son many years from now." God was very moved by David's intentions and his love for God. Although God wouldn't allow David to build him a physical house, in actuality, God would use him to build a far greater spiritual house. David's house, his kingdom, and his throne shall be established forever, God promised. This was an incredible statement. It was actually David's royal line that would later produce Jesus Christ. And God prophesied that the throne upon which David sat would eventually become the throne Jesus Christ will rule from after his second coming. It will be the throne from which God's family government will expand forever. It will be the center of a royal, universal family that every person who has ever lived or who will ever live will be given the opportunity to be born into. The next morning, a sober yet excited prophet explained to David what God had revealed to him. David was at first a bit disappointed that he wouldn't be able to build God's house, but that was quickly replaced with joy when Nathan told him that God had instead promised to unconditionally establish his house forever and that a descendant of his would rule on the throne of his kingdom for all eternity. David was incredibly moved by God's revelation. He immediately gave God thanks and meditated on what God had revealed. David realized that he wasn't thinking big enough and that God had a far greater plan for his throne and a plan for Jerusalem more magnificent than for just ruling the 12 tribes. God had a plan to impact the whole world. That night, as David prayed, he thanked God for revealing such an awesome plan, not for his own vanity's sake, but because it would magnify God and benefit all mankind in a greater way than David had ever dreamed. This one evening of revelation and discussion about building God a house changed the lives of these men forever. Now that God could see that David's heart was right, he began giving the nation victories not seen since the time of Joshua. David was inspired to free the Israelites from oppression and take control of the land God gave to Israel at the time of Moses. However, because the people didn't completely trust God for divine protection, it was only through heavy fighting that Israel obtained this freedom. First, David set off to deal with the Philistines on Israel's southwest coast. He had just won 2 victories over them, and now he wanted to make sure they could never enslave Israel again. He captured their city of Gath, which, because of its location, had continually menaced Israel. From now on, an Israelite garrison would use the city to control the Philistines. Next, David marched his army across the country to its eastern borders. Here he confronted the Moabites, who were known as fierce warriors. During David's exile from Saul, the old Moabite king had given him and his family refuge. However, a new king had taken the throne and was encroaching onto Israelite territory. After a fierce battle, David had a great many of the Moabites put to death. Those who were spared were made tributaries, meaning that they brought gifts and paid taxes to Israel. But the greater threat to Israel was from the north, near the Euphrates River. The Syrians were age-old enemies of Israel and were the dominant regional power. They occupied much of the northern portion of the land given to the tribes of Manasseh and Gad. As David marched north with his army to recover the land and to liberate his countrymen, he realized that this would be his most important battle yet. Israel's future hung in the balance. To be continued in our next episode, and continue the adventure by reading the Bible story. Find it under the Resources tab at pcg.church.